Welcome to the Sport Mode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fourth Wall's Famous First, number 5. I'm Freddie.
And I'm Mark.
And this month we're going to be talking about Mark Miller's Savior and American Jesus and Neil Gaiman's Violent Cases. So first up, Mark Miller's Savior. This book is very similar to the book American Jesus or Chosen that's came out recently. It just got printed through Image, and I believe it was first printed through Dark Horse, isn't that right?
Yep.
Savior, on the other hand, was originally put out in the 80s by a company called Trident Comics, and Mark Miller was writing it while he was still in high school. First issue of the comic has art by a guy named Daniel Vallely, and it's people compare it to David Lloyd in the letters column of the second issue. And it's got a, you know, kind of more realistic tone and kind of more appropriate to the story, in my opinion. From the second issue to the sixth, which is the last issue, the art is done by a guy named Nigel Kitching. And people compare his art to Ted McKeever. Personally, I kind of like the original guy better, but the second guy, it kind of grew on me when I first opened up the second issue and saw how different it was. It was kind of strange. If you'd be interested in checking out these, they are available on eBay. That's where I got my copies. I got all six for like $20 plus shipping. So it wasn't too bad. But the plot of this revolves around a superhero who goes by the name of the Savior, and people think he is the Savior. I think he's like the returned Jesus. I don't think he exactly says that, but he doesn't quite deny it either. But pretty much from the beginning of the series, we know that that's not at all what he is. I think by the end of issue one, you know that he is the Antichrist. So there's a lot of plot lines in Savior that are going on. There's also a homeless guy who thinks he is the returned Jesus Christ, and you're led to believe that until toward the end of the series, and you find out he's just an angel with delusions of actually being Jesus. Judas shows up toward the end of it. He's in a plane crash, and then he walks away from the wreckage and keeps trying to kill himself. And there's a confrontation between Judas, Savior, and the baby Jesus, who speaks perfect English. It's really not explained, but I guess if you're the baby Jesus, that's just, you know, you can do crazy shit like that. And there's also another subplot about a girl praying to this priest, and the priest is kind of like losing his faith, ends up burning down his church. And he gets blamed for some killings, and he goes on the run, and he tries to save this girl who's being molested by other priests, I want to say. It's never actually shown. It's all, like, off-panel, but the parents of the girl, like, hear it from the next room over, and it's some bleak, bleak shit. So when I picked up American Jesus, I was kind of expecting more of the same, honestly. And I was pleasantly surprised, especially when I saw Peter Gross's art, which is probably the furthest thing from my imagination of what I thought it would be. So why don't you tell people what Chosen is all about, Art?
It touches on the same things as Savior. It's kind of like a distant cousin, if you will. It's about this 12-year-old kid, Joni Christensen, back in like the 80s or so, just hanging out with his friends, looking for old porn mags that they can look at for whatever reason. You do the math. And this Mack truck lands on Joni, and just kind of like that movie Unbreakable, like he survived without a scratch. And everybody's trying to like figure out, like there's this, I'm trying to remember the priest's name, but he's in it, and Joni's parents are in it, and they're just at the hospital trying to figure out what's going on. And the nurse kind of little hints a few things about Joni's past, and just like where is like his backstory, and like what's up with, are you really your parent's son or something? And then it just kind of goes working through it until you get to like the end of the first issue. It's a 3-part issue, but if you get the trade, it's like, it actually works kind of well like that. Just think of it every issue, because there's 3 of them, think of them as just the first act, second act, third act. So at the end of the first act, you find out he's the Son of God, and everybody kind of goes along just thinking that he's Christ and stuff. Well, the kids all believe him, and that's how his like popularity skyrockets from there. But like the adults are just kind of like, they're not too sure. And obviously spoilers, but it's kind of obvious that it kind of leads into that whole, nah, he's actually the Antichrist. That's like the big reveal, but it's like you kind of feel it already that that's kind of where it was leading to anyway. But I still think it's a good story, and thanks for mentioning the Peter Gross art, because I think it's wonderful, and it really sets the tone for what Miller's trying to do here.
Yeah, did you know that the priest, Father O'Higgins, was actually supposed to kind of look like...
Miller's priest?
No, it was supposed to, that's not what I... In the back of the new printing, it said it was supposed to resemble Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And then so doubt.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, there were lots of clues that they talk about in the back of this new printing that was pretty interesting. Although I do think Image needs to get a new spell checker, because there was some of the, like, they had this like 3-page conversation between Miller and Gross mm-hmm. in the back, and they're basically just, you know, talking about the series and like little hidden things they'd put in, and there's definitely some moments in it that they could have used spell check. But yeah, there was a few things I didn't catch, like that scene you were just talking about, where the woman in the hospital is kind of telling him, you know, how his future is going to play out. If you look on the wall, there's actually a horned shadow in the background.
Yeah.
Of Jody, which I thought that was pretty cool.
There's a whole bunch of little stuff like that. Like, there's scenes where, like, 666 shows up, and they get into, like, a whole bunch of numerology. They get into the shadows. I think there's various Jody's shadows that you see.
They're supposed to, like, go the wrong way, yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that, which I thought was really good. But I felt like... I love the Easter eggs that they threw in it, but like I feel like also like tonally that you'll get, you kind of feel like going on like what I said before, it's like, yeah, he's kind of the Antichrist. It's kind of obvious just the way the story was going anyway. But I still think it's a good story. I picked up the version, I think, before this, the one that came out a couple years ago when it was just chosen before the whole American Jesus thing came out. I knew that Miller was going to do this, but it sounded more like a pipe dream back then, as opposed to, like, I guess now he's going to really work hard and get that American Jesus thing going, but...
Yeah, it was only, like, a month ago, or maybe a couple months ago, that he finally announced he's coming back to this, and he's going to be completing the trilogy. I think the first the sequel to this one is going to be called The Resurrection, and that's supposed to be coming out fall 2009. So...
Yeah,
get pumped.
Mm-hmm. I certainly am. No, I'm just saying. But, you know, the only problem is if you read going into, like, the other works of Mark Miller, like his Wolverine series. his latest Old Man Logan arc.
Yeah.
Which I'll love, but, you know, delays.
Yeah.
It's really crippling it. So, like, that's why I'm worried about these books. And now that Mark Miller's also, like, skyrocketed into, like, Hollywood mainstream with the Wanted, his movie, and his upcoming Kick-Ass, and, like, all of his, like, Miller World, because this is part of the Miller World series as well, which is, like, his own, like, creator-published-owned sort of thing. Like, all of his other books are going to start B-movies, too. Like, this is going to become a movie. War Heroes is also going to become a movie. There are talks. So I'm just saying, like, fall, that's just slated, so don't get your...
Well, it's printed in the back of this trade. It says fall, so I don't know.
Well, it could be late fall. It could be fall, winter.
So, like, they'll still be having, like, printings of this, like, in 2010. It'll be, like, fall 2009, the sequel.
Maybe someone will get, like, a whiteout or something and change it.
Yeah. But I think my favorite part of this was when he first got his powers and he knew, like, those random trivia questions to, like, who was, I think it was JFK's, you know, the people that were working under him.
Yeah, Robert McNamara. That was, like, one of those weird things, because it's like, I was totally for that, but at the same time, it's like, would that really work like that? I know we're getting to a completely different tangent there, but it was just like... I was okay with him raising the dead and then turning water into wine and all that good stuff, but him knowing pop trivia kind of threw me a bit.
Oh, political trivia.
No, he knew other stuff, too. Like, he knew, like, the quadratic equation, and, like, he knew, like, if you just asked him something, he was pretty much, like, Johnny on the spot.
Right. I don't know. I just like that moment, because that would be something, like, if I, you know, when I was that age, that would be something I would have loved to have done. I could totally, like, put myself in that position, you know? Because I didn't always get the best grades, and I thought that would be fucking badass if you could be like...
What? Christ.
Yeah.
That's how it works. I can see.
But yes, as far as the comparisons between this and Savior, obviously much, much darker with Savior. You know from the beginning, pretty much, that the character who has all the powers and is able to help people is actually the Antichrist. And so I don't know exactly where Miller's headed with this one. I don't know if he's going to – I mean, obviously there's going to be a confrontation between – the Antichrist and the return Jesus, because at the end of Chosen, he's headed to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a nice twist at the end that he was the president.
Yeah.
Which was not really explained, if I remember correctly. He just is the president.
Yeah. No, he's president.
I guess if you can, you know, cure people and all that, then...
Yeah, Christian nation. I think it would work. But I just hope the second one, like, I really hope he actually gets into that other side that he was talking about. And we get to see Jesus' take in part two.
Yeah, because I think there's, in some of the extras, he's saying, you know, like, so much of Christianity is based on, like, you know, judging other people and war and all this stuff. And, like, Jesus' original message was to love one another and try to help each other out and all this stuff like that. And that's where the difference is between the Savior, or, you know, whatever you want to call the character, and actually Jesus are going to come into play. And there's going to be, like, this divide, or I'm imagining that's what's going to happen between the followers of each. So... Well, I think that about does it for Savior / Chosen / American Jesus.
Yeah. It was a double feature sort of thing. Buy one, get one free. You get two reviews.
Yes. So, moving on. Neil Gaiman and Dave McKean did a book, and it's called Violent Cases. And this one is all yours, Art, thank God, because I don't even want to try.
It's not that hard. It's Neil Gaiman, Dave McKean, words and art. It's a perfect marriage, actually. Dave McKean doing David Mack before David Mack was doing his thing with the whole photorealism and stuff. It's pretty much, it's another kind of kid's tale, kind of going along with the whole chosen American Jesus sort of thing. This one's more about a young kid who was, like, born, kind of brought up in Portsmouth, England, I want to say. And he was just talking about, like, his father and stuff, and, like, something bad happened, he can't remember, and, like, that's pretty much the whole theme of the kind of story, like, how your memory works, and, like, sometimes it betrays you, sometimes things are not so clear as to anything. So, he got his arm broken, so he,
which his dad did to him.
Yeah.
By pulling him upstairs.
But is that even true? I mean, it's like that's how it works, because you can't tell, like, did he do it on purpose?
Right.
Yeah, so it's like, it's kind of unreliable. The whole story is kind of unreliable, but the narrator, which is actually modeled to be Neil Gaiman, which is very interesting.
But at the time, like, people didn't know what Neil Gaiman looked like, so it wasn't like they were trying to be like, see, look, it's Neil. They were just, yeah. I guess, I don't know what the creative decision behind that was to make the narrator look like him, other than he's the quote-unquote storyteller.
Well, because that can work in, like, so many different levels. Like, that could be, like, a real story that Gaiman was telling, but, like, not telling, you know? Like, this could be, like, an autobiographical story, but I don't know. I guess that's how he was playing with it. Just kind of going off. But going back to the story, he gets taken to, like, an osteopath, which I think is, like, a bone doctor.
Yeah, I didn't know what the hell it was. I had to look it up. I can't even afford the regular doctor, more or less a bone doctor.
Like, the big chunk of the story is the relationship between the kid and this doctor, and how their relationship kind of grows from there. And, like, they only talk, like, 3 or 4 times during, like, the whole time span of the story, but I always felt like that was a great relationship.
And I liked how they didn't know, he didn't remember what he looked like.
Yeah.
Like, in the beginning of the book, he asks his dad what he looks like, and he's like, oh, you look kind of like an Indian. And then he's like, no, that's not right. And then he looks kind of like Einstein in parts of it. And then toward the end of the book, he changes, and he looks like a different character.
And I mean, and that, I think, was really, like, the crux of the whole memory kind of fading stuff. And I loved how, like, when his father mentions, like, oh, he had a big nose and, like, an eagle's nose, and then you cut to the eagle, and then, like, and then he's trying to, like, add it onto the sketch of the face. I love that process, you closing your eyes and trying to imagine what this guy is, and then McKean just did it for you right there. Eventually you find out that the osteopath was once as, like, a former employer of Al Capone, and then the whole...
I mean, it's employee, right?
Employee.
Yeah.
Wrong sentence, but the point of the matter was just, like, this guy telling the story to the kid, and, like, in passing, he starts mentioning stuff like gangsters, and the kid's really excited about this. He's just like, what's a gangster? And then, like, he asks his grandma, he asks his parents, and they just keep giving him, like, the simple answers. But then he finally does, like, his own research, and then he learns that, like, these gangsters were, like, dirty men with hats, and they carried, like, Tommy guns and violent cases, which was the big title of the whole book. Like, I think from that moment on, I was really into it, just because I loved sort of the process of this kid's mind just going, like, who are these gangsters, and, like, these guys are really interesting, and I'm talking to somebody who was working with them. And that's pretty much, like, that's why I think I love the story so much, because I loved how he, like, because his home life wasn't really that good. His parents, they seemed separated, they seemed wrong, and his dad, like we said before, was obviously abusive. And, like, he kept bugging him about the gangsters, like, so much that his father kicked him out of the car, and they had to wait, and there was, like, arguing and stuff. This doctor is pretty much the only person in his life that he actually cares about, because he doesn't care about his friends, because they're not really his friends. They're the kids of parents and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think the title is another interesting thing, because, like what you said, the gangsters carry their guns in, it's, you know, violin cases, whereas the book, each character has their own violent tendencies on different levels. Like the father, like we said, with the kid, there's a scene about midway, I guess, through the book, with the kid going to a party and they're playing, what's the name of that game for the musical chairs?
Musical chairs.
And then all the while, the osteopath is telling this story about how Al Capone had a party where he basically bashed in a bunch of competitors' heads in with a baseball bat. So there's the violence in his life, the violence in the kid's life, and then at the, you know, the end of the story is violent, you know, if you want, you know, depending on how you take it, I guess. And then the kid even says, while the osteopath is describing this story to him, he's like, I wouldn't mind seeing what these kids at this party's faces look like after being beaten with a baseball bat or something like that. I don't remember the exact line.
Yeah.
So, like, it's, you know, there's violent tendencies in, like, pretty much every character in this book.
Yeah, it's the juxtaposition. And then even, like, and then you just touched on, like, a point that, like, because I accidentally said, I didn't even say, like, violent cases. I said violent cases. And then, like, that sort of thing about it, like, what we hear and what we interpret it, it gets translated into something else. And then, like, the violent cases become violent cases to the kid. And I just kind of like that whole speech and dialogue right there was just kind of, it's sort of the whole crux of the whole thing, the whole story, and like how we just misinterpret it because we're young or whatever, and we just look at it in different light and stuff. So I think this was like a really good story, just on like those aspects of alone.
Yeah, I think this is definitely something that I don't think any two other people would be able to pull off. Like, this is like definitely, like, this is like Neil Gaiman. Like, whereas Mark Miller's book, like, he didn't really have his signature feel when I was reading Savior. Like, it seemed like, you know, like a high schooler writing an offensive religious comic book. It was kind of all over the place. I mean, it was good, but it didn't have the finesse that this does. And especially with Dave McKean's art highlighting Neil Gaiman's script, I mean, it's definitely worth the $15 is what the Dark Horse edition. It's been, they talk about in the supplemental material on the front how it was originally printed in black and white in England and then eventually got brought over to the States. And now, like 10 years later, Dark Horse has got the rights to it, so I'd say pick it up if you're a fan, if you've only read, you know, Sandman, or if, you know, for some strange reason you only know of him through the Batman book that he just did. Whatever happened to the Caped Crusader? There's even more craziness, stories within stories. That's a reoccurring theme with Mr. Gaiman. And this is a kind of an example of that. So I don't know, anything else to say about violent cases?
Wrapping up, I was just saying that it's probably not the greatest story of Mr. Gaiman's, but I think it's damn good for his first. You can see kind of the magic in there. I probably would recommend it more as a read, like see if you, like a local library has it, as opposed to dropping $15. But yeah,
thanks for telling me now. So what was the best, like, first Neil Gaiman book someone should jump into to read?
Sandman.
All right. Just, what about Mark Miller?
Yes. Mark Miller's harder, but I actually, fuck, I can't do Mark Miller like rapid fast.
Not Wanted.
Wanted was all right. I actually think Chosen was a little bit better. The only problem is Chosen's an incomplete story. That's the only problem.
There you go. What about Superman Red Sun?
Oh, yes. I was trying to think of more of a general title. You know, like something out of like a Superman story or something out of superheroes in general. Like something that you can just drop right in and you don't really have to know. Superman kind of works, but I was thinking a little bit something more easier. Like if you never read a comic before, just can just drop it down.
Yeah. Well, according to the back of American Jesus trade paperback, most people are picking up Civil War, because it's the highest selling series in over 10 years, according to this book. So I don't know about that. If you think that's true, or if you know anything about the highest selling comics of the past 10 years, give us an email at contact4thwall@yahoo.com, because personally, I don't believe that Civil War is the industry's highest selling series in over 10 years. I just can't wrap my head around that. Can you?
It rained. No, Final Crisis. No, I don't know.
Well, all right. Well, I believe that does it. If you want to listen to more podcasts, sidecasts, famous firsts, and more geeky goodness, go to breakthefourthwall.com. Be our friend at MySpace at myspace.com/fourthwallpodcast. What else, Art?
Oh, I got the Mark Miller book, Sonic the Comic.
That's the one to start with?
Yes.
Oh, and if you want to listen with my interview with Mark Miller and Tony Harris, that's on the main site. We talk about Sonic the Comic. We do not talk about Chosen or Savior, unfortunately. But a good time is had by all, except for Tony Harris, who doesn't have a good time.
It's apples and oranges with those two.
Yeah, exactly. But I didn't get an interview with Neil Gaiman yet, so keep your fingers crossed for that one. But, yeah, and stay tuned for next month, Famous Firsts number 6. Hopefully something evil. I don't know. We already kind of did evil this month. Fuck.
Yeah. Damn it.
All right, well, I'm Freddy.
And I'm Art.
Peace.
Out.